Now, come here. Do you want me to be like, welcome back to this, that's what I heard podcast, or can we just go with whatever? But we're like 900 so episodes in. I still don't know what I'm saying at the start.
That's his favorite thing to do.
Welcome back to the podcast with myself and Carly. So we had a little eventful week the past week together, rather than being on FaceTime on the toilet, because that's normally what we do, sit there for about an hour talking to each other, talking shy. We were out and about. We went to, where did we go first of all, Carly?
We went to Rebecca Kelly's live podcast show. She is Everywhere We Go podcast. It was brilliant. We had a lovely time, didn't we?
That was our first kind of show to kind of more or less go to regarding the podcast.
Yeah, our first time to see a live podcast show. And I have to say, it was actually Rebecca's first time to do one herself. And she was
just brilliant. You just know from the, she has like little video footage on her Instagram as well. She actually brought her kitchen table and chairs with her and had like a little backdrop of a kitchen. So it was just a real raw emotion through the whole thing, wasn't it?
It was a very whore show. Very like whore. Everything was centered around all of her beliefs and all the things that she really stands for. So it was a really lovely time, and of course millions of people were there that we knew, and
weapons.
No, the crowd was
like, people were talking about all their life experiences and they're like, yeah, go on. Like, no, I'm telling you, there
is
that
time.
He's
not who he is there as well.
No, no jobs.
But Mary Bourne.
Oh, she was unbelievable.
I'm obsessed with her. I'm just obsessed with her voice, but more so her personality.
I know. She didn't give a fuck, didn't she? No.
Do you know what? Again, she's just real, like, she's just whore in every sense of the word. And she told her story about her struggles with mental health and all through the lockdowns and everything. Yeah. And it was just so raw.
I know. It was mental. But come here, I actually Googled Mary Bourne's net worth and it says she's worth $12.5 million.
So Gizzle Mary,
because my car got clamped and it got removed from where I actually parked it up.
Before we get into that, can we just say at Rebecca Kelly's show, there was a camera facing out. There was a camera
facing out
into the audience. And I didn't realise until like more than half the way through. We were sitting there and I could just see the little red light recording. And I was like, Sean, is that a camera? And he was like, oh, fuck. So basically, right, and I don't mean to be rude, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings because I'm not singling anybody out, right? But the fucking smell of Billy Bow along that crowd that we were sitting in, right? And it was that potent that I thought it was me.
I thought it was Carly.
I was like, Sean.
I was like, no, that is you. I'm
now,
stinking.
Don't get me wrong, right? The theatre itself was fucking scalding. We were all sweating. And I'm a psycho over being clean. I'm a psychopath over being clean. And I literally had just showered before I walked out the door, but the sweat was pissing out me. Ever since I've had to be on treatment, I do sweat like a bastard. And with that, I said to Sean, like, Sean, is that me? Can you just check if that's me? Because I don't know if I'm getting this smell off me or not. So Sean's smelling me and he goes, no, Carly, I do think it's you.
I was like, you're stinking.
And I thought he was winding me up and he was like, no. And he didn't giggle. And I was like, no, he's not messing. He really does think that's me. And I was like, no, Sean, there's no possible way it could be me because I just washed myself. And he was like, no, Carly, I think it is you. It's really bad. And I was like, oh my God. So throughout the whole show, if Rebecca releases footage in the crowd, it's just going to be me and Sean smelling me.
Smelling our armpits.
Trying to figure out for the whole time, was it me? Actually, turns out wasn't me in the end, thank God.
And you know
God.
What made it worse is Carly had a fuck off blazer on us, so we were ducking our heads under the blazer. So it was like I was just kissing our armpit.
Yeah.
It was the weirdest thing ever.
And also, we've
seen a few people vape before we seen it. So if you see us having a vape on it, it's really not us.
If you see someone having a vape, it's certainly.
Who?
Who would that have been?
I do, other people
are. And I wouldn't mind, everybody was looking at us because I had a Benidorm fan. The sweat was pissing out of me, and I'm not built by that climate. So I'm there baiting myself with the Benidorm fan, and then smoke and all's rising because loads of people were vaping, and then all the smoke was over their head because I'm there fanning away. So everybody thought it was us, it wasn't us.
No, it wasn't. And speaking of vaping, like, I did have one at Joanne McNally's show. I went to see Joanne McNally last week?
Was it the week before?
Oh, lads, also, we tried to basically record this last week and it went to shit. So you enjoy that because today is Monday and tomorrow's Tuesday and that's when we're releasing it.
You're listening to us. Today. Tomorrow.
Is it?
I made a vows with
it. But went to Joanne McNally's show and I was in a fucking kink. Like, the whole hour and a half she didn't, like, co-character.
Yeah.
She just kept going. I was like, she needs to stop because I'm going to piss myself. Like, my jaw was killing me for about 3 days from laughing, and the fella beforehand was great. She had a big fuck off Baraka. I think it was like a big Baraka thing, but like ash on top of it.
Right.
Baraka was just smoking from the whole thing. Is she like addicted to that or Salbutamol or something? I don't know. She's just a fucking weapon anyway. Would highly recommend. And I also got 2 tickets to her show with Vogue as well. So I'm fucking buzzing for
after
that.
All you're giving out on Instagram, people totally enjoy
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'm the third row in at the stage.
Very
and
well
she'll ignore me again when she sees me.
Oh, he's out there calling her. Ew.
No, but yeah, no, had a little ball. What else did we do?
So what we were talking about there was your poor car situation.
Oh, now lads, why don't I get a minute? Like, honestly, like, now, Ian, don't be fucking laughing at me either, because you'd be reveling me the money to fucking uncamp it if you want me to come down to do this. Now, lads, like, I parked it right outside the house. Now, Carly has educated me because clearly Carly knows everything. So she was telling me that because I was like, right up to the fucking pole that I can't park there, and because I'm two wheels on the path I can't park there. I don't know, Carly, will you tell them? Apparently I can't park there, it's a regulation.
Realistically, you're really not supposed to park two wheels in your car.
So I'm going to be a bitter bastard and go around my field and call everyone out that
so
has
two wheels.
So
that's what I'm saying. If some jumped up garda that hadn't gotten his hole in a while went around all housing estates and seen all the cars parked up in the path, realistically you could get a fine or you could end up clamped because it is illegal. You're not supposed to. And that again is for causing obstruction to...
Yeah, my mental fucking health, it caused an obstruction to... The fucking bollocks as it is, I can't move my foot. Like, what do you expect me to do? And I feel like I'm the only one that can drive it because the clutch is going and so is the accelerator. Listen, do you know what? You've probably done me a favour. Felicia is like the new Herbie Fully Loaded now in the pound.
So are you abandoning her?
Oh, Felicia's gone. Bye, Felicia. Bye.
Literally, bye, Felicia.
No.
But other than that, we had loads of fun when we went to the pictures.
Yeah, well, I was very tired now. Before that, we went to get lovely fishy food. And fishy food makes me sick, the smell of it. But I actually love the taste of it. It's the weirdest thing ever.
I hate the idea of it, but you love the taste of it.
It smells disgusting. It's really disgusting. It really is. No,
no, he does be gagging when I put the plates on the table.
We pulled
in
the house and I was like, huh? And she's like, what are you fucking being a dramatic? I was like, the smell of shit out here is disgusting. And to whoever that family was sitting in the rain in the middle of no lane, like just sitting in a lane way with our family eating food and the pissings around.
It was torrential. And there was just people on the floor.
Sitting on the floor, open view to everyone just sitting there, mad random people. Anywho. But yeah, then we went to Elvis and Elvis is very long, lad. So, and Carly went to see it twice.
Did you not love it?
No, I did. Like honky tonking all over the fucking cinema now. Come on, Carly. I was not off and all. It's like 3 hours or something, is it?
It's 2 hours, 40 minutes. And that's only the cinema version. The director is bringing out a 4 hour version.
No, your Stephen's going to be jumping around the house.
Oh my God. He's got a hunger born alone. He's now. He's going to see it for a tour time next week. No. He's had to see it twice in the cinema already.
Go. You're going
to
be whipping shit up. I went natural.
I literally
popcorn.
Said it the other day and I was like, you know what? Maybe I won't go again. No, but I love a good film. So I'm at the scene Elvis twice and the other week I went to see Top Gun twice. Now, for obvious reasons, Tom Cruise is a little saucepot and see Miles Teller.
Who's that?
Oh my days. He plays one of the main characters and I won't even get into the story. Right. You've obviously never seen Top Gun, have you?
No.
Sinful. But anyway, all the lovely men. I'd go and see it again just to look at them. I promise to God, all the lovely men. So Miles Teller is Rooster in it. And there's a lovely man called Hangman. And he looks like a lovely little Swedish man. He has blonde hair and blue eyes. And I just love him. And yeah. Anyway, everybody has been messaging and asking us for a more in-depth episode about me and Sean's like basic life stories, really, because we didn't realise that we'd get so many new listeners for the podcast just from the
charts.
Nor
10,000 followers in the fucking page. What the fuck? So thank you so much.
But there's a lot of people that have followed us just from the chart. Are they seeing like a bit, an article online and stuff, and they didn't know who we were and they actually didn't follow us on social media, so they wouldn't know an awful lot about us, and it's been requested that we get into it. So, Sean, I just want to know, like, what makes you and why you are the way you are, and just everybody's obsessed with you. Like, you're such a huge personality. And
look at me, I know. I'm like, everyone loves me. Everyone loves me.
But, like, what made you this way? Like, did you always think that you were going to be such an out there person? Did you always think you'd end up being the way
like
you are?
I've always kind of wanted it. Like, from growing up, obviously, I've been like kind of you with tension.
Yeah.
Like that's how, remember the first time we met, like now, who's more in our group, like kind of thing. So I think this is why we love each other, because now we don't give a flying fuck, we're very
yeah,
tired.
Yeah, but essentially it was probably a dominating thing.
Yeah, basically. But then like growing up, like I kind of, we feel like we'd have a similar but different kind of environment growing up. So their childhood was kind of just one big blur for me. And I just know that of a look, I had to go out and just do my bits. Like I was a happy child. That's all I need to know. I was grand.
Yeah,
I
had a nice like
I was just always
yeah.
out. But I feel like after there was kind of like a divide, my dad was kind of gone for a little bit, was gone missing. So with that divide then, I just feel it kind of kept me babied all my life, and I didn't get the
feeling
to grow.
Do you think that affected your, like, development per se? Like, what did you feel like when your dad
disappeared? I just felt like I was left sheltered in the house, and it was kind of like, you know, the baby's crying and it's like, oh, you know what? When they're in their nannies, like, give them a bit of chocolate, that shuts them to fuck up kind of thing. I felt like that's what it was. I felt like I was just giving things to be like, whatever way, whatever keeps them happy and whatever, like...
You are fobbed off a little
bit. I was just fobbed off. Like, do you get me? So, like, the little family puzzle that was all put together was kind of gone. So my ma had to do what she had to do to keep her two boys there. But then also my brother had to step in to kind of be the father figure to me, even at a young age, when he didn't really know what was kind of going on. So...
Would Keith essentially have been your, like, little role model?
Now, even though he wanted to punch the fucking head off me, because he's 6 years older than me, so, like, yeah. My mom was like, you have to take him out, give me a few minutes peace, and he's like, oh, no, and then, like, kind of going out with him, and, like, all the lads were like, what the fuck is he doing here? And he'd be like, listen, it is what it is, playing football, this and that.
He tried to integrate you in with integrate his friends. Because would you have had a big friend group growing up?
Like, we're just kind of the avenue. And it was kind of just me, the flats, Avenue and the Flats kind of thing.
Right.
And then that was really more or less it. And then it'd be just football and then cry. Don't ask me why I fucking went to cry, lads, because I still wouldn't be able to fucking kick snow off a rope. But
Keith liked to keep an eye on you, basically.
Liked to keep an eye out. So then, obviously, growing up, Keith was kind of like the father figure that was there. So I was like, how can I kind of get validation off that person to love me that bit more? Because me actual...
So you don't
like the first man that loved me was me that. Second one was Keith, but he's gone missing now. And I'm like, oh my God, so I've only got another one. So I was like, someone's just at the disappearance. So with that, I joined football. And Keith was a fucking superstar. Like, next level, like, as in, on the wall, every single thing, we had him out. There was photos of him. He's getting trials for England, everything. And then I was a fucking psychopath and Keith killed me one time. So I booted his shin and, like, broke his shin for, like, weeks. And then he couldn't do all that. But look,
wow.
He could have done that if he wanted to, but then he didn't. But I kind of more or less essentially fucked him up. But I always kind of felt like I was comparing myself to him. Like, I was good at it. I had players of the year, but it was never good enough for me, because when I had the player of the year, I was like, oh, I always wanted to be in the paper. I want to be something like that.
Yeah.
So then eventually, like, the whole sheltered life, I was like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm not living anyone else's dream. I was like, I'm doing me. I was like, so the dream for me was living Keith's dream through football. And I was like, so it's time for me to step out of this.
Did you feel like everybody expected you to be like Keith? Or do you think that you put that expectation on yourself?
I put that expectation on myself.
Right.
I was like, oh my God, I was like, how can I make me little, like, my brother, I was like, he's my best friend. I was like, how can I make him so happy? I was like, I'll do football because I know he loves it. So I was like, if he sees me doing football, I was like, it's something to bond over.
Just kind of
like,
fit in.
Just
yeah.
to fit in and just kind of feel like, oh, I have something with the lads then, because I always felt like out of place, because I knew I was like a little bit gay here and there. Obviously, the more I grew up, I was like, I don't really know even how to talk to these on the team. I was like, I'm just... The girls get me, and I was like, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Like, it's like girls, like, you get along better with lads,
yeah.
kind of thing. Do you
yeah,
get me?
100%.
But this is what it was, and I was like, oh, bollocks. But then I started finding my feet, and I was like, you know what? Fuck this. And then I was like, I'm going to join basketball. So I joined the girls' team in basketball.
What major? Because I think it's bizarre, right? It's obviously not an arts, I think.
But
is that like the dominant sport in your area, is what I'm saying? Like,
no,
basketball?
No, it's the strangest thing ever.
So
it was
strange.
Just like, I think we knew the girls at this time that were playing basketball or something. Mm-hmm. But it was me, Brad, and Shannon then. So me and Brad Banner were like inseparable, and so was Shannon and then Aoife and all. So we're just this inseparable group. I think Shannon and Aoife joined basketball, and that's how it kind of went together.
Yeah.
So then we missed a training session, and he was like, no. He was like, you're not going to be playing for 3 weeks. I was like, we missed a training session. Like, I'm, what do you mean we can't play a match? So I was like, fuck you, I'm not bleeding going back to you. So then I think that was like the stepping stone to me, but like, oh, I'm not living Keith's life anymore. I was like, fuck this, I'm doing what people treat me like shit.
Right.
So I was like, I'm stepping out and living my own dream. So I went to basketball, and I had to join the girls team for a while until the men's team, well, boys team, whatever, was
yeah.
set up then. But then I was like, oh my God, I was like, oh, I'm actually 10 times better at basketball than I am football.
Literally a little
so
superstar.
I was like, I'm not like, I'm physically being known as Sean Phibbs and not being known as the fag or the goofy little kid or the wrecked head.
Oh, you're not Keith's little brother.
I was not Keith's little brother. I was like, I'm Sean Phibbs and people know me from that. So it's like when you kind of more or less were in your dancing and like we kind of love the attention and it's like, that's my safety net. So it's like, I'm going out and you know you're going to do bomb because you're like, I feel like I'm 2 steps ahead of everyone. I felt like I was always like 2 leagues ahead of everyone. And I was like, no, I'm going to be top scorer or I'm going to do something spectacular. Someone's going to talk
this
about.
This drove you. This was your motivation. Like, love that.
And I loved it. And then Keith loved to watch me. He's like, you're just an animal. He's like, I physically now I didn't have to go watch you to be like, you needed me there. He's like, you just done all this by yourself. He's like, you went to these camps, you get 2 buses out. And he's like, you just built yourself up into this fucking warrior. And he's like, I'll never forget watching that. And he's like, you're just unbelievable. And I knew since then that he was like, yeah, he's like, you're Sean fucking Phibbs and you're known for this. So.
And how did you feel to get that validation from your brother?
From
like, you
brother.
Sought this for so long by doing football,
by
but little
sport.
Did you know, by being
little
you.
Little did he know I was doing it. And like, now that I think back on it, I was like, no, I'm living someone else's dream.
Yeah.
But like, amazing. Obviously, he's my best friend, and like, and he still has my best interest at heart. And obviously, growing
always
older,
will, yeah.
It's just the bond is going to keep growing. So to hear little things like that and how amazing you're doing previously. And I will always talk about the same story, about the same match that you came to watch. And he's like, you're just an animal. And he's like, no one will ever take it back from you. That kind
that
of stuff resonates.
It's along.
Always there.
But you got it by being you, not by following his dream, by following your own.
So yeah, with my dad not being in the picture for a while, I was like, bollocks. So I was like, what am I supposed to do? So I was like, I just had that little father figure there. But like, it was bollocks. Like, it's just, my mom just kept me sheltered and baby for my whole life. So I literally felt like I only kind of more or less started growing after basketball.
Yeah.
If you
yeah.
get me. And then school was a whole different fucking ball game.
Now, do you think your ma had an idea? Obviously, you were quite feminine and living. Oh, yeah. Living.
Well, doing the splits on holidays, and I was about five, I was doing that in front of people with
do you get
mushroom
me?
Haircut.
So,
in front of
obviously,
everyone.
You're living in a working class area. Dream is solid. Do you know solid. What I'm saying? Like, it is. So, your poor ma's going, oh, if I let him out on that poxy road. And then, say, if Keith was able for himself and able to handle himself, like, people would probably kind of get a buzz out of picking
was
at you.
Well, yeah.
But that's
but
what
that
I'm saying, being like, oh, you Keith's
well.
Little brother. Do you know that
when
way? So, your ma's probably shit.
When I went out with his group, he was like, I think that was the first time I heard someone call you like a faggot. We knew, but he's like, what's that fucking faggot doing? And Keith just had murder with his friend. So, he's like, no, fuck that. And he's like, and it was always since then, he's like, I'm going to keep taking him out. And he's like, if you want to keep calling him faggot, I'm going to keep punching
I'm
your head off
you. I'm going to dance on you every time.
And he's
you
like, he is who he is. He's like, so just leave him be. He was like, you're a fat cunt, but you don't see me saying that to you kind of thing. Do you get me? Like,
but that's very rare for a young flit, especially in that area growing up and that age, to turn around and say, listen, that's my little brother and he is who he is and that's the way
well,
he
I
is.
I didn't notice because I was like, everything was just a blur. I just knew what I was doing. And I was
like,
I'm still trying to picture everything as I'm talking, but I was like, everything was a blur. I just know I had a ball.
Yeah.
But like, even in school, like, still seeking validation because you're like, oh fuck, it's a mixed skill. And I was like, what if I'm in the lab with, what if I'm in the class with all the lads? And I was like, oh, how do I speak to this without sounding like a fucking tick or like being in a shell and be like, oh my god, am I saying the right thing? It was a lot, so I'd act out differently.
Your worst nightmare is being made a show.
Being made a show off. I was like, I'm actually a lovely human being. Now in scale, I was a bollocks, but I felt like if the only way to kind of get validation from other people to like me was if I was the class clown.
You were like, if I get you forced,
yeah,
you can't
we're
go
like
at
that
me.
Anyway, still, if we slag ourselves forced, but you
that
can't
is
get
a
me.
Wall, Sean. That is a defense mechanism to fuck. And you're quite like that even still now. Like, oh, well, I'm going to slag you first before you even dare open them out about me, and I'm going to put you off it. So, do you feel like that was kind of your journey in school? Is
that
me. I'm going to get you before
I'm
you
get
me?
You before you get me. That's what I've just fucking been learning. But, like, it's just different. Like, it's 50-50. And then obviously being great at sports, I feel like I can do everything. Like literally ice skating backwards, roller skate, well, I can't do it at my ankle, but I could do everything. So I was like, forced up for a period, like he's a little fucking skit. So I was like, grand, they love me for this. Like badminton, all them, like it was just sports that would brought me into
physical activity.
So I was like, grand, I was like, if I just keep being good at this, I was like, everything will be normal. And I was like, and then if I give a funny joke here and there, even if it was the wrong joke, and I apologize growing up because I did hurt some people. And I didn't know what I was doing. It was just my safety net, like falling back to slag people. And I know it's the wrong thing.
So
but
your mouth goes ahead of you and
I didn't know
time
anything.
Without you even realising.
I don't think before I speak.
Yeah.
Still down sometimes, but yeah. But we're learning, lads. But so it was just a lot growing up then with that. And then eventually after school, I went on my first holiday, that was whatever. And then that was just like kind of more or less getting to know myself. It was the first time I was away from. Like, no, I didn't have sex with anyone. But no. I was like, here it is, lovely boys. I was like, because growing up, like I said, I don't remember much from family holidays other than being a bollocks. But then I was like, oh, I was like, he's a lovely man there. Lovely English man with
his top
off.
Is this around when you were 15?
No, this is when I was 17.
Right. Because you said you only kind of realised fully you were gay when you were 15, wasn't
it? About 15, yeah. And then after that, I was like, right, I came home. Then I had trials for a scholarship for basketball.
Right.
So I got my scholarship for basketball. And I was like, you know what? It's the scariest thing I ever done, getting accepted into it. And I was like, look, it's either you move now or your scholarship's over. Like, you can come to Plymouth and you can go to university and you can do your sports therapy and whatnot in college. And I was like, oh, bollocks. I was like, no, I was like, I was like, can my brother come? I was like, can my ma come? Do you know what I meant?
Oh,
I felt like,
you.
I just
yeah,
felt like a little,
homeboard.
I felt like Bambi.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I can't walk. I was like, I can't do this. My ma was like, fucking do it. And my brother was like, if you don't do this, he's like, that's us done. He's like, this is what you set out to do.
Right.
He's like, this is what makes you Sean. He's like, this is what makes you comfortable. He's like, so why not do that every single day? And he's like, and just be yourself, but 10 times better.
Yeah.
And he's like, you'll find yourself. So I felt like I was like, I done the scholarship, by the way, lads. Moved over to Plymouth, brought about 7 suitcases. And I didn't realise back then because I didn't know.
Like you.
Didn't have a fucking a pot to piss in, but I was like, my man's just going to pay for it, the scholarship people are. It was about 140 which I had to pay for my suitcases to get added on.
Oh, God.
Now, God love her. But went over there and I felt like I was living like a Hannah Montana world.
Right.
I felt like Hannah Montana was Dublin. And okay. Everyone knew who Hannah Montana was, but no one knew who Sean Phibbs was over there. So
and that's a culture shock. Not a culture shock. I'm saying a culture shock. No, that's a shock to the system for you. Because you're so used to everybody knowing you, yeah. being friendly with you. And then so, you go over here and you're just little Sean.
Just little Sean. So I was like, you know what? I was like, lad, you're literally the director of your own life. So that's what I was like. I was like, this is my new little play. I was like, it's a blank canvas. And I was like, oh, I'm going to direct it the way I want it to be. So I was like, I'm gay. I was like, these people don't know me, so
yeah.
they're just going to assume it anyway. So if they say it, I'm just like, yeah, it is what it is.
Experience.
But it was because I didn't know them, and I was like, they didn't grow up with me all my life to like bring up these memories and whatnot. It was just literally, hey, I'm Sean, and it was like, yeah, this is what it is. So I felt like I wasn't being judged or seeking anything got to do with anyone. So it felt great. It felt like the whole weight that was on my shoulders from childhood, everything going up, I was like, that whole thing is just taken off me. So, lads just wouldn't really notice, but yeah, then I met Alex over there and he was like one of my good friends and he was like, Sean, I think I'm gay. And he was like, I know you are. And I was like, oh, another gay person. I was like, so yeah, I was like, both of us are gay. Didn't get to do that and he was fucking hot as fuck. But anywho, just good friends.
I miss you.
You're in Sydney somewhere on the road, you psycho, but come on. Yeah, so that was that. And then I was like, right, then I could actually breathe that bit more.
Yeah.
I felt like I was fucking meditating all over there. I was like, I was just going through a little journey of life. And I was like, no,
that was you really accepting yourself, Sean, for your
finding myself.
Time.
And I was like, right. I was like, oh my God. I was like, I feel like this is it. I felt like I needed to do the 6 months. And I was like, now I'm fucking done with this, walking in around at 5 a.m. for 40 minutes to go to training. If I'm on a scholarship, get me a bus.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I have to go to college in my damn clothes. And I was like, this isn't for me. Plymouth was a fucking dive. It was literally like the ILAC, English trim knit, everything all into one.
And not to get the shiver down my neck. No, it was awful.
It was awful. And I was like, no, fuck that. So then I found out then that my mum was working day in, day out, that the scholarship wasn't being funded the way it should have been.
Right.
So she was keeping me over there. And I was like, no, I was like, that woman's bollocks as it is. It's like she had to work in about fucking 42 years of my life already. It wasn't for me. And then when I heard that about my mum, I was like, we don't have money. I was like, I know we get by and like, back then we did, and I was like, but we get by now. And I was like, no, I can't have her struggling for 7 days.
Yeah.
Like working. So I was like, that was another big stepping stone. I was like, found who I am. Thanks, Plymouth. I know I'm gay going home.
Yeah.
But then before I went home, I went to like a gay club with Alex and I was like, hashtag UK gay, hashtag gay boy, hashtag gay and all. And then I knew Keith would see it.
Yeah.
So I knew he'd like train it into me, man. I'd be like, right, he finally accepted himself.
Bless.
So it was another thing. I was like, right, he'll do it for me. And then I went home, but I didn't say it to them, and Keith knew.
So did you not? You just put this up on Instagram.
I just put this on Instagram,
day.
Trying
you
to get
didn't
a lovely.
Discuss this with anyone.
Trying to get an English guy. I was like, hashtag gay. Hashtag literally, I am gay.
For you.
But so that was that. And then when I came home, Keith was just more or less like, love you, hug you, blah, blah, blah. And then that was like nothing talked about. It was like, we already knew, like kind of thing, but he didn't say anything. He's like, I'll let you say it.
There was no big drama. It was
no
just...
No big drama. And then I was just so fucking tired. Shock. I was very tired after shopping.
Yeah, well,
I
was very tired.
And I
tired,
came
baby.
In and it was bitter balls out. And it's the one thing I miss most about getting the bathroom done up. My bath is gone. I used to have a bath literally, no, morning, noon, night. I'd have a bath for about 3 hours with like a little glass of wine and whatnot. Yeah. But came home and I was like, ma, very cold out. I was like, no, have we got enough hot water for our bath? And I was like, she was like, yeah, come on. I was like, no, listen, I know you know I'm gay. I said, but I'm bringing the shopping bags upstairs. I said, you do you. And then I came
like,
back there.
Like, what a way to bleed and integrate that into the conversation.
And then I just came down the stairs after about 5 hours later. So I said she was like buzzing because she's a nosy rose.
Yeah.
And like, I was like, she was like just sitting outside waiting to ask me something. And she's like, I'm so proud of you and I love you. And she's like, nothing will ever change kind of thing. And then me dad, now this is a whole different ballgame. She told him, I was like, no, let me tell him. And I was like, I know yous already know. I was like, it's just me accepting me and I need to tell yous. But wasn't I fucking on the way home from a night out? And at this time, I think you could have 2 drinks when you were driving.
Right.
So I was like, no. I said, you know what? I said, I'm not even having one. And this lovely married man that used to be seeing me broke my heart. He bought me one and then bought me another one. I said, I don't want that. I had a good feeling. I was like, no, I don't want that. So driving home and I was like, bloop, bloop, bloop. And I was like, what the fuck? And her breath lies in me, standing me on the side of the road in me man's little bubble. And I was like, no, fuck this. So I rang my man and dad, and my dad was just laughing in the background. He's like, a simple bastard. And I was like, well, like, what? I was like, I didn't have a drink just as well because I'd fucking dive on one. And went home and he was just sitting in the bed laughing. And I don't know if they were getting hanky-panky up there because they're in bed very early. 40 up all night. But he was like, love you, so I'm very proud of you. And, all. And it's just been accepted ever since. So seeing as the puzzle piece are all back together and me not having to seek validation off of anyone. Obviously, I want it from my family because they're my best friends.
Oh, of course. You want people to be proud of you, the people you love to be proud of you.
The tour puzzle piece was like, bing, and it was like, you don't need to seek validation off anyone. But yourself, and that's it. And it's like, people don't love you for you, keep doing you anymore, because realistically you're the only one that has your own back. So that was just a huge stepping stone.
And you were saying about that person, because like, I think that we're just an amalgamation of lessons and feelings that we have learned from people that have came into our lives. What you were saying about the lovely man that broke your heart.
Yeah.
And that was obviously your first experience.
And because everyone wanted him, so I wanted him more.
That shaped you in any sort of way, and your belief about relationships?
Probably why I'm still single.
But this is what I want to ask you.
No, that wall was...
What did that do to you?
Oh, like, I was just like mindful, because I just remember dropping him off to his nannies, and I was like, no, listen. And he was like, what? And he was like, I love you. I was like, oh, you love me? I was like, I love you. And he's like, I don't think I can do this. And I was like, oh no, I was about to tell you I love you more. I was like, can you leave your husband for me? Expecting at the age of 18. He was like, no. But I do see him the odd time out, and it's still fine, and it's all civil. And I was like, you know what? I was like, you're only 18. He's a few years older. I was like, you didn't see it from that point of view. You just didn't love.
You can't be ashamed of that.
I finally accepted who I was, and I was like, now I'm like letting someone in. And I was like, the very person who it is, not a fucking girl anyway. But I was like, now moving forward, I was like, oh God. And then I think that's why the wall and the barrier has been up ever since.
And do you think, like, that happening all them years ago, that is still why your barrier's up?
Oh, that why, the Great Wall of China. Keep walking. No, it's not. Like, it's just as well, Instagram has another big deal. Like, because I like older men, I'm like, no. I'm like, what if I'm bringing someone out and someone's running over to me? And I know I'm still seeking validation from that as well. And like, it's just hard. I keep thinking, what if, instead of just fucking doing it?
Ah, yeah. Like, you'd rather not go on a date in town with somebody.
I'd rather not go on a date because I don't want to accept the worst of it. Because I'm just like, I'm actually a really nice person. And I was like, well, someone just loved me for me.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
But I feel like, Sean, with you as well, like we said about the whole skill situation, you do have this thing of if you even slightly, it's like an inferiority complex. It's like what I struggle with. If you even slightly make me feel like you're talking down to me, or you're going to make a show of me, I am going to attack you.
Yeah.
So do you think that sometimes if you even, I think that like that, because of the hurt that you experienced with that married man, I think that you live in like a paranoid state, that you think that people are just coming at you to try and hurt you rather than to enjoy it and your time.
Yeah. And then Instagram didn't help as well. Obviously, when you get that odd bit of abuse, like, I know you get 99 good messages, but that one message, you're like, no. Everything you wanted to feel, you're like, yeah, I am that person. I am. And I know it's
people
hard.
Take you quite literal as well on Instagram, and I think that's very unfair, because you're a slagging bastard. We all are. Like, any single person that has a platform like that, they're all very Disney princess online. No, but what I'm saying, they're all very Disney princess online, and they're all very careful about what they say. Sean, you just come out with what you say. Yeah. You don't mean any viciousness or malice behind you, even when you're saying fuck you.
Yeah.
It's all from a humorous point of view. It's never from a fucking vicious point of view. Obviously, although you do get wound up sometimes. But that's your humour, and that's the way you are. So when people start fucking dissecting what you're saying, and
when you peel back the onion, like the little layers of it,
people just go at you for ridiculous reasons. Like, it's lighthearted. The internet isn't so fucking serious all the time. Like, stop looking for reasons to try and put people down, basically. And you get it a lot.
I get it a lot. But when I'm feeling like that way, I don't know what it is. Like, obviously Instagram was like, that was the next kind of big thing. Like, I know, like, the little puzzle piece came together and I didn't have to seek it anymore, but I still didn't
know. How did your Instagram go off, and how did you end up with that amount of followers?
COVID.
No, but you had Sean, you had an awful lot of followers as well before COVID.
I'd nearly 10K, I think.
Is that all you had?
I'd nearly 10K. You had more than me.
Oh, I know, at one stage.
You had more. Katie had more than me. And I was like, no, fuck off. I keep doing these videos and people keep jumping up hundreds. I was like, no, I'm getting forward bleeding month. I said, nah. But that's another big thing that happened as well. Because
so when them followers started going up, did you say, I can do something with
this? I was like, I'm actually loved. I was like, so love your fucking self. I was like, because if this amount of people love you, I was like, why can't you? Do you get me, kind of thing?
Yeah.
So that was another like huge stepping stone, and this is where I'm at today. Like, obviously we still have our like little panic attacks here and there and overthinking, 100%. But we're still growing, and I think I've grown so much in the past 2 years of who I'm actually physically
You're a completely different person from the time I met you,
And I know
Sean.
Me worth now.
Ah, so 100%.
The next person I'm ready to settle down with and get married, I'm just saying, okay, because I don't need someone else.
But you've grown up so much in the time that I've met you, even your views and values, and like the way, remember, we were talking about certain situations, and you're like, well, Carly, I'm not in a position to discuss that with you. And very HR, like, Carly, that's not my business to disclose. And I'm like, no, do you know what, Sean, fair play to you, because 2 years ago, you would have sang like a fucking canary.
Oh, I would have been literally.
You would have,
Sean.
You really would have. And one thing now I know is that I can tell you, Anne, and I can trust that it's not going to go past you. Whereas 2 years ago, I didn't have that confidence in you. But you have grown so much as a person. I think you've become more compassionate to people. I think that you're just growing for the better, and it's lovely to see my lovely friend doing that. And
I'll know that you say that now, that you would have sang from the fucking rooftops. I'll never forget, I outed someone, even though I knew I was gay. Oh. I didn't mean to do it. I said it to our group of friends.
Right.
And I still want to apologise to this day, because I won't, like, that's, you only find yourself and you're like, no, I actually think I am, so she confided in me. And I just want to say, I'm so sorry if you are listening, or if it does get back to you. I didn't mean any maliciousness behind it, and it was just me. That was my safety blanket.
Now his eyes are watering, he's not well.
Back on, I know, but I'm so sorry. And I just made your fucking life a living hell, because it came from everyone else rather than you telling people how you felt.
Oh,
and I'm so sorry, I really am. But I love you, and I always will, and I hope we can get back friends.
Oh no, I'm actually really not well. No, but Sean, that's what I mean. Like, whereas before you would have been like, yeah, well, I said it and that's what I said. And I didn't mean it. And if they want to think that I meant that way, they can. But you, like, you're literally sitting here crying. You are not that person anymore. And no, you, like I
and
said.
That's what I'd love them to understand. But it's like, the grudge is still there. And I know it was so many years ago. But I'm like I always put myself in their shoes.
You're empathetic. You're compassionate. You're feeling for everybody.
But I always
put
myself in their shoes. And I'm just honestly so sorry again.
Going forward, what do you want for you? What can we expect from Sean Phipps in, say, I'm not asking you for a 5-year plan, because I think that's ridiculous.
Oh my God.
People do that. But going forward, what are you interested in, and what would you like to dip into in a career aspect? Like, what would you love to do?
I don't, and I still don't even know. Like, I love doing my little sketches, and you do get a good bit of money off it, don't worry. You do be taxed a bit, but still. I honestly just like seeing, like, you one day being like, you know what, I fucking have a cancer thing. I was like, no, bollocks that. I was like, life is for fucking living. So I'm just hope I'm fucking happy. And the 5 years down the line, I'm just living life and I'm still doing me. Like, what's the point in having 100 grand in your bank? And I get it if you have 100 grand and that way it should get through whatever. But like, if you die the next day, 100 grand's gone to shit. Whereas like, you get the fucking money back, you don't get the memory. So this is what I've been learning. And my ma loves it, and she's like, you're younger than me. And I love hearing that. She's like, you just fucking keep going and going and going. So to be so restricted with this boo, that's a load of shit. So basically, I'm just going to be little happy me, and I'm hopefully not in Dublin, and I'm in London somewhere. I won't be in Australia, because I'm saying that about 5 years.
Yeah, you're saying that about 12 years.
I would eventually went.
I'll visit with you, but we're not going to live there. We know that. We know that.
Yeah. But now, I'm not going to ask you that question.
Yeah, like, I don't find myself overly interesting. But apparently everybody else does and wants to know the ins and outs. So basically, I tumbled down my mat in 1994, singing and dancing, and I haven't stopped.
No, stage kids.
Yeah, haven't stopped singing and dancing since. I always loved attention. I always loved making...
What? You love attention?
I always loved making people smile. Or, like, even now, making people laugh just means the world to me. Like, that just really is something that makes me feel alive. And I know that's ridiculous, but that's just how I feel. My early life like that just consisted of school, dancing, you know, out
just
playing on the road. Yeah, just carrying on. Like, I wasn't even, the gas part is, I wasn't even a bowl child.
Just having a ball.
Like,
go.
And so we ended up getting fucked to glass and having to go to school, because there was a school bus and we used to get brought on the school bus, and it suited all of our mas and dads because they were all working at the time. So we got sent to glass and having rather than going to the school around the corner. So I picked up a little posh accent for myself, didn't I, in going to school in glass and having. So no. So when I came back and I was palling around on the roads in Finglas, all of the kids that went to the school around the corner, I was like, well, why do you sound like that? Why don't you go to your school? Do you think you was a better than us? Do you know, it was real one of them. Ended up getting like bullied and stuff. And when you have red hair as a child,
oh, it's game over.
Oh my fucking God. I don't know if it's the same in the posh areas, but in a working class area, you are getting rinsed. It doesn't even matter. And of course, my man never said to me before I went out playing on the road, Carly, you're a little red fuck, you're gonna get absolutely lashed out of it. So when people start giving me abuse, I lived like that, a very sheltered life, and I would like palling around with friends that were quite quiet. And like, I used to sing in the church choir. And I swear to God, and Sean, like, they were all literally 60, 70, 80, and I was the only child. And I used to love going around to Little Doris and all, and I used to have a ball. So they were automatically, they were like, she thinks she's something, like, she's an oddball, this, that, and the other. So I got ripped asunder for being ginger, for being posh, for doing little church plays and singing in the choir. I got ripped. And then I remember I went into my ma one day, roaring and crying, screaming for, oh, ma, and they're out there saying they're going to kill me and they're going to batter me. My ma turned around, come in here, whinging again, and I'll burst your fucking neck. She said, so if they don't bat you, I will. She said, so come into me crying again. I swear to God, I'll break your nose. And I was like, oh. Well, I was more afraid of me ma than I was of them. Absolutely. So that quickly changed very fast. So, like that, I always got along grand in school, as I said. But as I got older, I lived in a very hostile environment. And obviously, you don't notice that until you start to grow up a little bit. And like, I would have been on edge an awful lot of the time. Mm-hmm. I would have having to walk on eggshells, and I would have having to be very careful about how I carried on. So when I was getting bullied on the road, you're supposed to be able to go home and close your front door behind you and it be a safe place. Yeah. But it wasn't for me. So I was frustrated at home. I was frustrated at getting it out on the road. Exactly. So when I went into school then, Sean, it was all coming out in school. Because when teachers were picking and prodding at me, yeah, I was like, well, you can't hurt me. You can't anything to me. If I run amok in here, you're not going to do anything to me. So I used to be like, do you know what? Obviously, now looking back, I didn't know at the time that was what I was doing. It was a subconscious thing. Yeah. But now looking back, I'm like, Jesus Christ, I really did go in there and say, I don't get away with it anywhere else. So here's where I'm going to do it. So me school years then started to become very challenging for me, because I was just, I had an inferiority complex, and it's something I still struggle now with in my adult life. Again, I'm only unravelling an awful lot of stuff this year and seeing why I am the way I am. I always thought that like people were looking down their nose at me, and because I was inferior in different parts of my life, essentially, I always thought people were attacking me. So this was where this wall came from. Mm-hmm. And this is where this build up aggression came from. And my attitude, now don't get me wrong, I wasn't flipping chairs, I wasn't smashing windows. That wasn't how I done things, but I was just cheeky. And my attitude was very cagey. You didn't know what way you were going to get me on a day. You didn't know. Some days in school, if there was anything creative, it was got to do with singing, dancing, PE, yeah, anything creative and physical. Yeah. I got along fantastically. Anything academic like that, I had no interest in, you lost me. I started giggling and messing with my pals.
Yeah.
And again, I was a very easy standout figure to just, Carly, shut up, even if it wasn't me talking. Yeah. It was always, Carly, Carly, Carly.
We're very similar skill.
Do you get me? Yeah. So I'd always flip the fucking lid, and it made school a very challenging time for me. And God bless them, because that was actually a lovely school that I had went to. There was great teachers in it, but there was also some fucking arsehole teachers that, thinking now, me at 27 years of age, if I was teaching a class full of children and I seen a child with an attitude like that, I'd kind of want to pull them to the side and be like, look, what's going on?
Yeah.
Like, is there a reason why you come in some days and you're full of anger? Like, is there anything going on at the slide I can even help you with? Or is there, you can come into me class one day and say, listen, miss, I'm not the Mae West. Like, can you just lay off a little bit? I don't think that an awful lot of teachers approach it the right way. It was so easy to say, she's just bold and she's a little cunt. Do you know what I'm saying? She's a bad child.
And I'll be like, yeah. Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying? Listen, they had their own shit going on, and I wouldn't have been, although my ma's my best friend in the whole entire world now, growing up, I wouldn't have been, not that I wouldn't have been close to my ma, I would have, and she'd done everything for me and she was fantastic, but I had an awful lot of resentment towards my ma because of the situation that we were in. And my ma spent so much time, again, now as an adult I see, trying to keep the peace. Mm-hmm. I didn't see that as a child. All the time that my ma spent trying to keep the peace and trying to keep things at bay, I seen that as her not neglecting me, but I was like, you're not really taking up for me either.
Do you know what I'm saying?
So I was like, and do you know what? I'm just going to fucking not tell you what, and I'm going to keep to myself. And again, all this resentment is building up in me. All this hurt is building up in me. Do you know what I'm saying? Then my ma got really, really sick. It was kind of out of nowhere. My ma's a hairdresser. So she was on her feet all of her life from the time she was 16. Yeah, yeah. So she developed a disease called degenerative disc disease. It's where your spine starts just to disintegrate, like a salpadine, essentially. Like, our back just started to fucking disappear. She was crumbling. So she went in, she had to have major surgeries on her back, and she ended up in hospital for so many months at a time. And that meant that we were left with my dad. Now, before I started saying this, I wanted to say this. I have no desire to disrespect anybody or to tar anybody with any certain brush, and I want to be very mindful of how mm-hmm. I put this across, because I'm not out here to evoke anxiety in anybody. I don't want to hurt anybody.
Yeah.
And
it's just your life.
It's just my life. And I can't really explain to people why I am the way I am unless I tell these parts, the ugly parts. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? So like that, my dad was brought up in a generation where parenting was very, very, very different. Mm-hmm. And he was the eldest of eight, which comes with an awful lot of baggage from families that grew up in them times. And like that, they were from a working class area. They were working class people. Things were extremely different. So to my dad, just being present in the household was his job done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was food in front of you and you were dressed. Now, don't get me wrong, Sean, I had the best of fucking everything. Everything. Brand new tellies, brand new PSPs. That new came out, a brand new phone. We had it.
That's the exact same.
Now, I'd have thrown your telly, a PSP and everything else at you if you just had it. I would have swapped that now for essentially being able to sit down and talk and having that coming in after school and how was your day and how did you get on.
Yeah.
And now, don't get me wrong, there was it was small talk, it was vague. And when my mum was in the hospital, then obviously my dad was just throwing her lunch at us and dear, I fed and I didn't have anybody to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody was asking me how I was getting on. And I know this sounds so stupid, but my mum made a deal with me when I was younger. I always hated my red hair and I always hated how long it was. It was down to my arse from the time I could fucking remember. And my mum always made a promise to me, if you kept your hair long, I'll always do it for you. I'll always wash it. I'll always blow dry it. I'll always do it for you. And she always had me hair
and
massive.
And she still is doing it.
Yeah, she still is till this day
even
doing it.
Sharp, but it's gone.
What you call it, when she was in the hospital, something so simple, but I couldn't handle my hair.
Yeah.
And that broke my heart. And I just felt like I was going around scruffy. I had nobody to speak to. I missed me ma essentially because my ma was the wheel that mm-hmm. kept on spinning and spinning and spinning. Now, the wheel just didn't slow down. The wheel was fucking gone. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I just felt empty and I hurt so, so much. And I didn't realise again now in my adult life how much that had an effect on me and how quick I had to grow up for myself in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that had a huge effect on me. And when she came home then, obviously I had realised you've been very cold towards your ma for a long time. She was always so strong and this figure of strength. I never seen me ma cry. I never seen me ma struggle. Nothing ma couldn't do. Nothing. Not a single thing. And then she's after going into the hospital, essentially like a size fucking what, 16, 18. She'll bore me for saying that. And then she's after coming out a size 4. Like she was malnourished. Like there was nothing left of her. Like me ma didn't exist. I went up to the hospital to see her one day and it was like, I seen her one day all plumpy and chunky and funky. And then I went in the next day and she's like a poxy corpse in the bed. She was grey. She had that many blood transfusions. People was poking and prodding at her for so long. Like I was just like, I don't even recognise her. She's tiny. She's so frail. And that destroyed me because like I said, my mum was always a pillar of strength to me. I never seen her struggle with so much as even lifting her. Do you know what I'm saying? So that would have had a big effect on me. And then I started freestyle dancing, like disco dancing, and that completely changed.
Everything.
Like that again, it helped me an awful lot because I would have been like quite insecure myself and I wouldn't have had an awful lot of confidence due to the environments that I was in.
Just like me with basketball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it plays such a huge role in your development and you don't realise again until you're older. So my best friends at the time, Kirsty Kelly and Jamie Kelly, they introduced me to this dance and they brought me, it was out in Ballymun and I danced for Thomas Gately and Energy. Still to this day, Thomas Gately is the only adult that I have never answered back. He's the only probably human being that I have never given cheek back to or answered back. Never in my life. And still to this day now, if Thomas stood in front of me and stared at me, I wouldn't say anything to him. I don't know what it is. It was just a presence that he had and it was a safe space for us to go in. Thomas always said, leave your fucking ego at the door. If anybody in here is scrapping, go up to the top of the class, sort your scrap out here or fuck off out. Yous are all paying the exact same amount of money. Yous won't be making me uncomfortable. You won't be making any of your peers uncomfortable. You sort it here or you get the fuck out. I don't care what you're paying. I don't care who your mare is. That's the way it is.
So he was like your first adult, but treated you like an adult kind
of
thing.
Yeah,
like,
it was the first time that an adult spoke to me and really treated me as a person per se, like he really did. He acknowledged everybody. He was just great. And I felt that having that figure in my life was very important. So yeah, big up Thomas. I done that for an awful lot of years, travelled, couldn't travel at force with me ma. So Sharon Kelly stepped in and was literally like my second ma. She brought me everywhere, never a fuss, never nothing. John, people are like, for fuck's sake, I have to bring this woman here again. Sharon offered to do everything. She done me hair, me makeup. If the kids was getting tan done, I got done with them. Everything she done for me and I idolised her for it. And essentially, without them bringing me into that world, I wouldn't have escaped an awful lot of what was going on mm-hmm. in my life. It got me away from an awful lot of trouble. So yeah, that went on. Then you get into your teenage years and you're drinking and you're and the boys are doing and you're wanting to be carrying on and fucking getting lost in fields and gargling and all the whole lot, and then essentially like things simmer down and you don't really want to be fucking going to your classes anymore. Literally you don't want to be going to your classes anymore, right? And you just start to kind of grow up, then like just start going out, you get your little boyfriends and stuff like that. I had my first little I had my little first little boyfriend when I was 14. So essentially when people start poking at me about relationships, that's something I'll get into in a minute. People need to remember that I have been in relationships and or seeing people from the age of 14. I'm now 27. That's 13 fucking years, lads. So
well, you never know who she's talking about.
Hopefully, hopefully, with the way I tell things, I like to think that nobody can ever make correlation between a person and a story, because that's not my desire. But yeah, I just had a wall up. That was kind of, as I got older and started to understand an awful lot of me surroundings and my environment, that was when the mental health problem started. So I kind of would have been really bad when I was about 16. I got diagnosed with depression when I was 16. And my doctor was a fucking half a head. God love him, Jesus Christ. I always say this, it's like he wandered into the doctor's office and sat down and said, like, hey, is I'm just here. And they just left him there. So he diagnosed me with depression, which was fair enough, and slapped me onto a high dose of antidepressants. Didn't explain to me that you can't have alcohol on this antidepressant. And like that, I went drinking with my friends one night.
Oh my God, you were great.
I went drinking with my friends one night. I blacked out now in the middle of one of my friend's fella's parties.
Oh, so you're in a house?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I blacked out in front of everybody. Everybody was losing their mind. Everybody thought that I was took A. Everybody thought I was taking drugs. Now it was the fucking antidepressant. So, oh God, they rang me mat and all to collect me. It's fucking awful. It's dreadful. They rang me mat to collect me. My mat clattered ahead at me in front of the whole gaff to try and wake her. She's like, see, fucking horse, she's locked. She's da, 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 da. She didn't know that I was actually
no blackout no more. I was fucking smacked out of you.
She didn't know that I was at the doubling up on me dose of antidepressant that day. So she didn't realise that like this drink was at the fucking messing with it. Mm-hmm. And I genuinely did black out. So the antidepressants actually done me worse than they done me good. Obviously, there's different forms of medication and different types either agree with you or don't agree with you. But I was never suicidal until I took antidepressants.
Really? Like what? Like when you're taking them, like what does it...
So what like my doctor done was he slapped me in. He slapped me in on a fucking high milligram of something that I had instead never taken like before. You're supposed to, phase people into them. Do you know what I'm saying? And I remember I couldn't sleep. Like, could not sleep. I was wired 24/7. And I just felt so fucking down. Like, so, so down. And I got to the stage where I was just looking at it and I was like, sure, if I swallowed a whole card of that, like, do you know what I'm saying?
It's mental because it's just a split-second thing. It's like one minute you're doing something and then you're like, it's literally just in this 2 second split, like in your head, you're like, no, fuck it.
Sean, it was devastating. So during them, I kind of went off the map for a while. I locked myself in a room.
Which didn't help.
I wasn't working. Locked myself in my room. The only time I left it was to go to Tyler. I just sat in my bed watching Skins, Shameless. There's loads of television shows I can't watch anymore because they just bring me back to that time. So it was the UK Shameless, Skins, stuff that I watched when I was knee deep in depression, and Skins didn't fucking help.
No.
It fueled it, if anything. I was like, I'm Effie. I'm experiencing all these hardships, and like almost glamorizes mental health issues.
Yeah.
It does bring them to people's attention, but it almost made it like fucking cool. So I was kind of
cool in your bedroom running on time.
No, I was like, I relate to this so much. They understand, you know what I mean? And my ma didn't fucking get what was going on. She was like, she has everything. And
yeah,
again,
no,
but
this is
old
this
generation.
Is the
they
yeah.
think that if you have an iPhone and a fucking good telly, bleeding 4K telly, you shouldn't be upset. That's not the case. So my ma used to get angry at me.
You couldn't have feelings.
Yeah,
you were just like, I'm still a baby on my life. You just
me.
Feel like you're that fucking baby.
Yeah.
Still.
And she could never understand why I was the way I was. And, it must be my fault. And I was like, this isn't about you, love. Yeah. As much as I love, it's actually fuck all got to do with you. It's problems that I'm experiencing. And I can't tell you why, because I'm navigating as a teenage girl, hormoned up to me pox, as well as fucking... as antidepressants that I shouldn't have been on. Now, I did come off them the second I started feeling the way I was feeling, like I'm straight off them. But it took an awful lot of me life off me. And to be honest with you, an awful lot of people say about depression or PTSD, or if you've experienced something traumatic throughout your life, you do go blank. I was disassociating, Sean. There's years, and I mean years upon years of my life, that I don't remember. Like, I do not remember. And it's devastating. And it's because your mind is such a powerful place that it numbs you.
Yeah.
It drowns it out so you don't feel that pain. So obviously you still feel the fucking pain, but you can't remember what caused it. So that was grand. Started to brighten up then towards the end of my teens. Yeah, like, I was doing my fire breathing and all the whole lot, and I loved that.
Literally.
Had a ball day on that. That was a lovely time. Again, it kind of reminded me so much of me freestyle. It's, excuse me, that's your safety
blanket, because you're like, I'm so good at this, and it's like, I'm not just that little bastard. It's like, this is the talent of Carly
Mahady. This is what I know, what I can do, and I love performing, and I just loved the buzz of it. It didn't matter if it was in a pub, it didn't matter if it was in a big
club. Just you in your own world, gone there for a few minutes.
Sean, I idolised it, and as well, yeah, I had like loads of people around me that I loved, and we all got along, and we were making money from it as well, so it was fucking great. Like, it was a great time. And then my early 20s came about. I ended up like that in a relationship for quite a while, and only now, again, as an adult looking back, that's when I discovered, I kind of knew in myself as well, I had a vicious fucking codependency. Mm-hmm. A vicious codependency. And because I had a wall up so much in my teen years, when I ended up in this relationship, I ended up kind of getting really soft.
Yeah.
So it was like, the more the wall dropped, the more the pain that the wall kept out simmered in. And all of these
just started flooding in.
Yeah. All of these, like, let's say daddy issues that I had were showing up in the relationship that I was in. And it was, I always seen love, because of the environment that I grew up in, as something you had to earn. So I need to show them how great I am, and I need to show them that I'm worthy of love, and I need to do this so they will care about me, and like, they won't just love me as I am, so I need to prove it, and I need to do everything for them.
So
I need
to
spend
looking for validation for every single thing you
do. I can't go to the fucking fridge without reassurance. It's ridiculous.
Is that bottle of water cold enough for you?
Do you get me?
No,
I'm
problem.
Embarrassing.
I'll stand out in the cold.
I'm getting a little bit better now, but God love me, at that stage, like, I just felt I had to turn myself inside out for someone to love me. And obviously when you're doing that, you kind of set a standard then that people get used to.
Yeah.
And so people expect you to just be that way all the time. And I done myself a disservice like that. I started to believe that I was only good at supporting people. And because I never wanted to face myself, I found it really easy to delve into other people and their dreams and their goals and to push them, because I didn't feel that I was worthy or that I deserved that love or that support.
They're looking for validation. They're all true.
I didn't believe it. So I was like, well, I don't like myself very much, but I really like the person that I'm with. So I'm going to put all my power into helping them and loving them and doing
and
everything
them
for them.
Love themselves even 10 times more.
Do you know what I mean?
Like,
and no, but at the same time, Sean, it's a very dangerous thing for me to have done. I should have never placed all of my happiness in a person. That's an unfair thing to do to somebody, in fairness, in my view. It is an unfair thing to do. And I didn't realise I was doing it at the time, but I realise it now.
Yeah.
So I was wrong in that sense.
If someone had told you back then, you'd be like, oh, maybe I don't.
Someone could stick a book of your life down in front of you now, and you could read every single page of it, and it won't make a difference. You have to go through and feel the hurt of situations to learn the lesson. Something has to resonate with you for you to learn from it. You know, no, anybody can sit down in front of you and tell you the rules of life. You're not going to abide by them, or it's not going to mean anything to you unless you go through these situations and feel it.
You're always just going to do what you want to do.
100%. Always going to, you're going to do what you see fit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? So I only look back now and realise how detrimental that was to my mental health. And when you're given, right, you start to become resentful when people aren't giving the same back to you. When that exact energy isn't reciprocated, you start to resent someone. But again, I can't demand someone else to be a certain way just because I am. The only person I'm responsible for in this life is me and my actions. Mm-hmm. I can't force anybody else to show up in a relationship the way I want them to. I can't
wait for you to listen back to all this now.
Oh my God, I'm going to feel
no,
sick.
No, you're not.
But I can't.
She's taking her own advice when you do.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I'm learning an awful lot. Like, whereas before I'd been like, they were a fucking arsehole. And anybody showed me like, they were a prick. And now I'm kind of looking at, well, Carly, you allowed it. And you put yourself in that situation. And it was evident
you
at the time.
You are vulnerable. What do you expect?
Everybody is in certain situations. But do you know what I mean? Like, and I've no badness towards anybody for it, because again, I'm a grown girl. It was my decision at the time. And that's why when people bring up relationships, it's very difficult for me, because
a lot comes feeling in, like you were saying, since you're 14.
Yeah.
Everything goes
That's what I mean.
Everything.
It's 14 years worth of this, that and the other, and people always want to know your business.
But
I have no desire to badmouth anybody, because at a certain point in my life, these people that I've been with throughout the years made me happy.
Yeah.
And I think that you should have respect for that. Do you know what I'm saying? I really do think that. And when people are so quick to badmouth their exes and stuff, I'm like, do you know what? Maybe that's something you keep private for your close friends.
And you don't get nothing out of it other than you fuck yourself up in the head.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, if it goes back to them, then it's just more drama, and it's not going to be a talk, it's going to be a debate, and then it's a load of fucking shite.
This is it. But I could come on a podcast, Sean, and we could pop this out tomorrow and be like, exes, this, that, and the other. Yeah. And it's clickbait, and it's going on and being like, she's going to rinse this person, that person. I would never fucking dare. Even if I feel indifferent towards a person, trust me, I'll rip them. But to me friends, me family. Not on a podcast for people. Now, bear in mind, it's not just people that enjoy it. People that highly dislike you to come on and listen to what hurt you and what damaged you and to have something against you. Fuck off, what do you think I am too? Good one. So that's why I steer away from speaking about past relationships. An awful lot of the time, even if I don't speak to that person anymore,
just your close friends kind of know the main.
Of course, of any relationship. But
like, you
wouldn't
open up, like, if you were drunk to someone.
No, I'm not one of them.
And I'm like, shut the fuck up.
I would never do that.
Like you said, they only, like, they'll pretend to like you, but they know everything about you now.
Ah, people sit and rub your back. Yeah. And oh my, I always said that you should have never been with him. So where were you? Why is your mouth so big now? Why are you so loud now for when I'm finished with him? If you felt like you wanted to save me and protect me from this horrible person, where the fuck were you? So don't do that. Do you know what I'm saying? But like, and I've also an awful lot of respect. My voice is shaking and all. No, I've also an awful lot of
anxious, squeezing the hands.
Respect for people that I was in relationships, regardless of whether I speak to them or not anymore, their families. Mm-hmm. I would have built very strong connections, even with people I was seeing throughout the years, their families, and they mean the world to me. So I'm not going to get on and start ripping their fucking family members asunder when I still have a connection with them and it's important to me to respect them as well. Do you know what I'm saying? It's a funny one. So
mental health wise, do you feel like maybe you should kind of take yourself out of the situation with family if it was like kind of toxic or what? No.
No, Sean, and I've had this.
I think it's always going to bring you back.
Not when you grow and you heal within yourself. I don't believe that. I know that people say an awful lot of the time, listen, if you don't break away from them, you're not going to break away from the person. Mm-hmm. I believe that if you do the healing and the inner work that you have to do, because I'm not willing to leave. Yeah, I'm not willing to leave connections behind with people that I genuinely build something special with and that I love, and I'll always be there for.
Yeah.
For again, an awful lot of people that came in and out of my life, their family members are fucking brilliant, and I'm still close to them. So I'm not willing to cut that off for the sake of ending up back in a situation with someone. Like, you're grown now. Mm-hmm. You should be able to be civil with people, regardless of whether it ended well or not. You know what I'm saying?
Depends.
But anyway, after the fucking relationship thing, obviously another huge part of my life was I had like a little bit of a mental breakdown in 2019. 100%, like, full sure I had a mental breakdown. I felt in...
How would you fail now? Come on.
No, like, I feel good now. I mean,
like, regarding back then, like...
Oh, God, 2019 was the worst year of my life. Oh, my God.
Is this when we were fully dying?
Yeah, yes. But that wasn't it. So I had a bit of a depressive episode coming on from the summer of 2018, and I felt it coming. And I could feel myself getting worse and worse. I could feel my mental health spiraling. I reached out. I told people. Nobody seemed really interested at the time. And I just felt it getting worse and worse. And I was putting myself on the back burner. Always putting myself on the back burner. Everybody but me was important at the time. And then it was like the kindest start of 2019. I just had a break. And I was like, I had been experiencing the pains in my chest from the summer of 2018.
Yeah.
I was putting them off. So I knew that I wasn't well in the head and I knew that my body didn't feel right. So that was when I went to the new doctors, explained me mental problems and I explained me physical problems with my chest. Throughout that summer, it was kind of like the start, middle of June, I fucking broke. Oh God, I broke. Like, it was phenomenally bad. I knew that everybody was talking about me. And people were sending me messages on Instagram, vile messages.
Vile messages?
Yeah, asking about my business, telling me things that I just didn't want to know. If I bumped into people I ought to talk in my group chat and this, it made me ill. It made me so sick. So I came off all social media. And bear in mind, at the same time, I'm knee deep and trying to figure out what's going on with my chest. And I was starting to feel like I knew it was something serious. So I deleted all my social media for 2 months, I think it was. Probably 2 months. And it was the best thing I ever did. I fucking idolised it. Had the best time of my life. Really, really enjoyed not being on social media. And then I really came back into myself. And me and my mab booked a holiday away. I was gorgeous on the holiday, Sean. Me lovely long hair. I was lovely and skinny. I was great. And then we came home and they're like, yeah, you have breast cancer. I was like, oh. Lads, for fuck's sake, like, it's the first time I'm actually kind of feeling all right in myself. I was coming around. No, we needed to off you, please. Thank you very much.
Oh, God.
So it's obviously not a breast cancer episode. We know that I went through all that. I got the mastectomy, done IVF. That's a whole different kettle of fish. Started me treatment. Then it was COVID and cancer at the same fucking time, which actually was a blessing in disguise, to be fair, because I didn't fucking miss Anne. Didn't miss very much. But also I became a COVID cop because all my friends were out gargling and hanging around with each other and I was bit a Betty Petty LaBelle sitting at home losing my mind. I was like, yes, dirty bastards out having fun while I'm at home suffering and nobody gave a bollocks, and I was really, really bitter at one stage, and obviously I grew out of that then, and it was the most sane and mentally stable that I had felt, because like I said, it was the one end goal was getting better. So all of the shit that I was upset over, like if my hair didn't go right one day or if my makeup was shite, it didn't matter. Now I look like a ton.
No.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like I literally, I
people aren't going to judge it on that anyway.
No,
just looking at you,
that's
like,
what
oh my
I mean.
God.
That's what I mean. I think it kind of, I was like, look, I look poxy anyway. So what's there to be upset over? Like all I have to worry about here is staying alive. So I swear, still. But yeah, my mental health was really good. And then the second my treatment ended, it was like all of the regular stuff that I had to worry about came back into
life.
How are you going to get into a relationship with one tit? Why will any man fancy you when you have no hair? Like,
and also attention, you loved attention growing up, so the attention you got from cancer had a big huge thing, because once it was that girl's fine again.
No, don't get me wrong. Like I was more kind of like typical. Do you know what I mean? Like I was expecting it. I was like, of course everybody's going to be up my hole while I'm sick.
Yeah, but
it's great to be friends with the sick girl.
And then you had everything to think about, as in like, oh
no, but the only things that I was thinking about was coming back around to the real world like that. Yet, like, how am I going to, all my friends are kind of seeing fellas and going out on nights out. Like, I'm going to look like their uncle. Nobody's going to want to go near me. Like, it was more, again, it was more so like integrating back into me fucking social life. The thought of going back to work made me fucking violently ill. Just loads of stuff got in on me. And yeah, like, and then obviously I came out of that. Was doing my own thing again, getting back to myself. Do you know what? I fucked off over to Chantel then, because I was just like, do you know what? I need a little break. Went over there, kind of levelled the head and came back and accepted that I had to kind of go back to the real world and get myself together. And it's been a process ever since. I kind of started like my proper little healing journey in November. I started doing Reiki. Yeah. I started meditating. I didn't start back counselling actually up until about 2 months ago. And it's
been
Yeah, it's been a process ever since. And I'm here now where I am. I feel a little bit stuck in a sense that I'm progressing so much in my mind and my health. And it's so lovely. But at the same time, I have these roots and I don't know where to plant them. I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. So I'm a little bit stuck at the moment, but also feeling heavily blessed to be in the position that I'm in, to be stuck in. Because I'm stuck in my health. I'm stuck in having a roof over my head and being able to
eat. So it's all the positives.
Yeah. But also, it's just that little, what am I going to do now? Where am I going now?
Yeah. Lads, so we peel back the layers of the onion. And this is fucking me and Carly. You've asked for so long. Now, we could still touch on about so much more, but we're very tired after that.
I'm so proud of you, because you've never, ever opened up to me like that. We're friends.
No, I've never opened to anyone, even when I sit with Alison typing it down. I was like getting so emotional.
You
so that's
have.
Why I feel like I need to move as well.
And I wouldn't mind. Sean had a whole Word document, and I mean a whole Word document typed out with fucking bullet points. I said, Sean, turn your fucking phone off, love. And I swear to God, that is probably the most you've ever opened up to me, the rawest you've ever been in front of me.
Fucking gets it.
Yeah. Well, that's the most I've ever seen you do it, and it was without your fucking template. So in future, trust yourself.
That's it. Ian, do you want to have anything put in there now?
Ian's fed up with us. Thanks very much for sitting and listening to... If you're still listening, Jesus Christ, we're very tired. Thank you for listening to Ear Lives. And obviously, like Sean said, we could have done an awful lot more, but you don't need to know anymore.
You don't need to know. And we're going to love and leave yous, and we're going to go get fit, because we're always hungry and tired.